Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guests.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm Lyle Benson, and I'm here with life transition expert Susan Bradley to talk about how to help clients make good decisions in times of transition. As our collective focus now seems to be shifting to what life looks like after the pandemic, we're all eager to go back to some sense of normal. But a lot of experts believe that the global pandemic will cause permanent changes in our lives, our psyches, and in the normal way that business is conducted in America and around the world. Our world could change in many ways beyond our current social distancing and wearing masks in public. As we return to some form of normal, we need to ask ourselves some really important questions, and we need to help our clients as well as they transition through this period of time. On a personal level, can you take advantage of this incredible opportunity we've been given to think more deeply about what your life will look like after the pandemic? And perhaps you can make some changes in your lives or help your clients with changes that would improve their lives and enable them to be able to be more aligned with their true purpose. How we can help our clients as they make decisions in times of transition is a topic that we think is really important in today's times. And we think there's no better person to help us talk through that and think about that than Susan Bradley. Susan's founder of the Sudden Money Institute, which began 18 years ago as a community of practice seeking to better serve the financial planning clients by developing processes and tools for the personal side of money and for clients that are going through transitions. This think tank created the Certified Financial Transitionist designation and a division for training and certification called the Financial Transitionist Institute. Susan has served on numerous professional boards. She's frequently quoted and seen in the national media. And I'm really enjoy the opportunity to have a chance to talk with Susan about this today. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Lyle. It's so fun to be with you. Thank you.
Sure. So I thought a good place to start would be to talk a little bit about transition and what that looks like. What does transition really look like? And what are the various stages that individuals go through in transitions?
You know, transitions are always with us. People say, you know, change always happens, life has changed, and things like that. But most of us were never trained from childhood on to manage change. We just do it. And change gets more complicated as you get older, and there's individual change, and now the pandemic is a good example of collective change. And even just the word transition, if you think about it, it means there is a transit. We say it's a transit from the way life used to be to the way life will be, but there's a big gap in between point A and point B. So what happens in the lives of all of us is we move along on some status quo level plane with some variation in life, and then all of a sudden there's a big pivot event. Maybe we planned it, maybe it just happened, maybe we welcome it, maybe we wish it never happened. But when it happens, there's no going back. You can't white knuckle and say, I'm not going through the pandemic. We're all going through it. People can't white knuckle and deny divorce or widowhood or the sale of their business. These events happen. And you need to move forward with this. Not moving forward causes more problems than really can be imagined. So most of us know that we move forward. And what happens in the finance world is clients will hire financial planners specifically for these events, planned and unplanned. And they want to be prepared for them, the ones that they see coming. They want to be somewhat assured that if the bottom falls out on them and everything gets disrupted, that they'll be okay. And then they want to manage it when it's happening, and then they have to adapt to the changes afterwards. So that transit is fairly long. And we study transitions and models, as you and I have talked about before, Lau, in different industries. Right now, we're really studying the transition models, the history of it in the medical field. It has some parallels to the financial planning field. But in our world, we have a pretty clear anticipation stage or a preparation stage. It's so common to hire advisors for retirement or for estate planning. So those are preparation stage kind of things. But we say when that that stage is happening, it's dynamic when the client is thinking about that event, and that event, whether it's retirement or an inheritance or sale of business or a death that's pending, that event that they see coming, they don't know exactly when or how much money will be moving and all of that, but they know it's happening, that thinking gets embedded in their actions and decisions or indecisions in advance of the event. So we call that anticipation stage. That probably sounds a lot like financial planning, right?
Oh, it sure does. Absolutely. We often deal with clients for the first time as they're going into or planning for one of those events.
Yeah. And sometimes people say, oh, I don't want to deal with it until it happens. You'll hear many times centers of influence don't want to refer a client to a financial planner because nothing's happened yet. When a heck of a lot's happened, maybe someone has died or a business has been sold, there's some complexity in settling the estate or the transaction. So they don't want to get someone else involved until things are settled. And by that time, all kinds of decisions, usually not the best decisions, are already made. So we want to work with people in advance of these events as best we can. And we have learned at the Institute there are things we can do with clients to prepare them for the real dynamic state, which is our third stage, and that's called the ending. That's when the event has happened. There's no mulligan. There's no do-overs. You're there. And that's really stressful, and stress can cause a drop in cognitive capabilities, energy levels, and many other things. So there's a neurophysiological as well as sociological response going on. So in anticipation stage, in stage one, we can actually help people manage the stress of that ending stage. You could call it stress inoculation. I guess vaccines and inoculation are a little more prevalent today, and this is on the abstract subjective level, so I wouldn't go too deeply into a comparison with pandemic there. But we can prepare people for the ending stage when some of the biggest decisions get made. Stakes are high. You've seen probably people freeze up during that time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, a lot of what we're talking about so far is our planned transitions, but oftentimes we're dealing with clients that go through completely unplanned transitions, death of a spouse, you know, failure of a business, those sorts of things. How does that make the transition different?
It usually enhances the challenges. I know that's sort of an oxymoron, an enhanced challenge, but it is more difficult. The early research on stress, on Dr. Hans Selye's work back in the '30s, said that there were two kinds of stress, distress and eustress. And the body responds exactly the same to distress when something it perceived to be bad is happening, or eustress, which is something perceived to be good. Think getting married, a windfall, an offer on a business, something that is good. There is a stress reaction. The difference between the negative distress and eustress is the impact of distress is usually a little more intense, but it lasts longer. That's the big difference between the two. So when people have these sudden events that rock their world, someone left for work and they don't come home, there was an accident. Things like that. The state of the people usually use words like frozen or numb. Have you heard people say that?
Oh, yeah, the deer in the headlights kind of feeling. They can't make any decisions or take any actions because they're not feeling anything.
Yeah. And it's hard for them to even do anything in sequence. Really high functioning people. Remember one time I was talking to the CEO of a mutual fund company, you know, very big deal company. We're sitting in the conference room in Manhattan and we're talking and someone's introducing our work to him. And he didn't seem particularly connected. He didn't see how it worked out. And then I said, well, has any event ever happened to you? And that's when he said, oh, my gosh. He said, yeah, my mother died a year ago. I'm the executor. I have all these siblings that rely on me. I can run this whole company even right after her death, but I cannot make a decision about the estate, and I'm missing deadlines. I've never missed stuff like that. I just can't think. My mind goes blank when I address the estate. And that's a normal human reaction to these events. And in his case, that was a death that the family saw coming, and he felt like all the ducks were in the row and he was prepared. But his human reaction made him less capable for dealing with the duties of an executor. And you'll see that all the time. And people feel shame around that. They feel there's something wrong with them. They thought they were smarter than this. This can't be that hard. Gosh, it's been months now. What's going on? And people around them can enforce or reinforce that feeling. So it's a very challenging time for people.
Exactly. And our role becomes so important to have some understanding of these challenges so that we can be better equipped really to help our clients as they go through this.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I know in your world, the members are both CPAs and financial planners. And I don't know of many other professions in the world that can handle these events better than that combination. The funny thing is it's such a conundrum to me, is that we've never really focused on these life events for specific training. We know the technical, you know how money moves around, you know the requirements, and you can test out possibilities, projections, and all that. But it's the human side that drives this experience. It is that human reaction, and we're not really trained. We don't train ourselves to manage well in prolonged stress. Many of us are great, right? You know, if something happens, we can lean in and we can organize and we can kind of save the day sort of thing. We rely on ourselves that way. But prolonged stress, the prolonged anxiety and change and grieving that can come along, that's a completely different experience that most of us are unprepared for. And it's the driver.
Absolutely. It's the underlying all of the everything that goes on in that kind of a scenario. Let's use that, Susan, to jump to the pandemic. You know, we're really still, as we record this, at kind of the early stages of this whole process, I'm sure, even though it feels like it's been going on forever. You know, March and April and May just felt like the longest months we've had as we all, you know, worked remotely and sheltered at home, and now we're dealing with these changes in our day-to-day lives that are a transition that really is wearing on people. And I'm starting to see that in clients, that they're just exhausted from this whole experience. How do you see this, the perspective of transition playing out in this pandemic?
Well, it's a collective transition. So I think that we're still in what I would call that ending stage, where we're trying to understand all the pieces to this new puzzle that we have. Some things we can see, some things we just can't see. We may intuit that this is shifting, and we can have lots of projections that if the airlines do this, then something else does this, and you can try to put it together. But at the end of the day, we don't know. So we're living with uncertainty, and uncertainty is tough, particularly if you're trained to be an expert. You're trained to deal with clients on uncertainty and make it certain. The uncertainty is not cool. So we're learning to live with that. I think we're doing a fairly good job of letting things just be for now and saying we just don't know the answers. But the longer we go, the more people want answers, what to do, how to be, what will happen here and there. And that usually drives some regrettable decisions. So we have to be kind of careful with getting feeling depleted with not knowing so that we want to act. And that has to do right straight through from the individual to global organizations. There's a feeling of urgency sometimes and just an exhaustion with the way it is. I can't deal with this anymore. Some decision is better than no decision. And that's what gets your clients in trouble too. So we have to learn how to stay in that area of uncertainty and start to look at things differently. And you end up looking more at the core. What really matters? A great question to ask clients now as we're starting to come out of the lockdown feeling and we're managing this newness. And by the way, I mean, let's think about this. We're in June of 2020. And in November of 2020, there's a major big deal election. And always in presidential election, there's some disruption, there's some chaos, there's some strong feelings. Well, we have that, you know, now, and it's probably going to grow. And that doesn't help us settle into the next phase. The next phase is a passage phase. It's not new normal. We're probably a couple years out from feeling normal after this. So we really need to get ready for uncertainty increasing rather than decreasing for a period of time. So what I would ask clients, and I ask myself, is what matters now? What's at stake? What do you want to protect over anything else? You know, we'll make this decision, that decision, or we'll stay in indecision. But what is it that we want to focus on to protect? And many times, the answer to that is not obvious.
Right, right. You've really got to dig deeply into a client's overall situation and help get them to really think deeply in order to come up with those kinds of answers, right? I mean, that's not something that just rises to the surface very easily.
It generally doesn't. And even if something comes right away as an immediate reaction, like my family, or my business. True as that may be, what is it about the family and the business? What feels threatened? What part of it needs to be protected? Because we now know we don't have as much control as we thought. That's a fallacy. But we have some control. We can put attention and resources and focus on things. So you want clients to know that you know what is at stake, because it informs your advice. It informs the way you shape an engagement for them now, because chances are pretty good that they may have the same answer, but the second, third, fourth, fifth level of that discussion brings you someplace that didn't exist before the pandemic.
Right, exactly. So we really need to get them to dig down deeper into sort of the why behind any decisions they're making in times like these, especially. I would think it's that much more important to really think through the reasons behind it at a very deep level.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of advisors that we train in, and we train in five continents, so that's five different cultures, really, and then there's all the subcultures within that. So we try and stay on sort of the universal human side of things. But advisors don't really like going into meetings and conversations or projects with clients where they're trying something new out, particularly if it feels different than their norm. If they are more an objective, measurable, concrete kind of planner, and maybe they're nice and they care about their clients and they have good conversation, but they're wired on that hard numbers, measurable side. For them to switch to the subjective side, the side that really drives decisions. Did you know that, I think it was Gallup, that came out with some clarity on this. They said that in normal times, just everyday life, we use 70% of our emotional brain to make decisions and only 30% of our rational brain. So we are emotional beings. So to move into that subjective space as an advisor, you really need to have experience and confidence. And that's kind of the new training that I see happening. It isn't, this is a cognitive bias, and this is how the brain works, and this is how stress can be used to enhance capability. It's about experiencing it. It's about using that science and the process. And once you do, then you don't get into the, well, why is that important? Oh, okay, so why is that important? You know, the interrogation of the whys. That just feels awkward for everybody. I had someone doing that to me in a professional setting, and I could see exactly what they were doing, and it was probably a good conversation, but they were so awkward with the whys. I just wanted to say, stop, stop. You're torturing me.
It is an uncomfortable situation to be in. And it's uncomfortable when you're asking as well, because you get those long pauses where people aren't necessarily asking, or they're not going down to that deeper level. And it's so important to let things settle in and wait that 5 or 10 seconds or whatever it may be to get clients, to encourage them to really think more and not jump right in with an answer or jump right in with a solution, as we as advisors often tend to go towards. We really want our clients to talk through that and to hear where they're coming from.
Exactly. And that silence that you mentioned, and that actually, according to the neuropsych people, needs to probably be measured sometimes in minutes. And just try that. Anybody listening to this, try being with other people that you would normally converse with and just be silent for 60 seconds. It can feel like forever, particularly if you're sitting there and you think you know the answer, or you know what someone should say, or you want to correct something. It is so hard to train yourself just to give that generosity of listening. And it pays off in spades, no question, but it's experience.
It's such an important skill to be able to have that, to be able to ask those questions and really sit back and listen, and listen without any biases or any preconceived notions, to really kind of collect where your clients are and where the other individual is coming from. That's so important in the process.
And what comes out from the clients is closer to what's really, really deep and true for them. And the fact that you heard that, they said that to you. Now you know that about them, and they know you know that about them. That's that bonding experience. That's that deep relationship that gets referred to and measured, but we never get trained to do it. And it is, I can't stop emphasizing experiential training instead of book training. We have a 300-page textbook, and great, you know, anybody can take it and read it and maybe pass our exam based on that. But that's only a portion of our certification. You have to be tested for deep listening. You know, you have to be tested for those kinds of mindfulness conversations.
Exactly. Yeah, you really can't, like you said, that can't be done just with a textbook. You've got to go deeper than that. Susan, tell me about some of the tools. Are there any tools that you would recommend that advisors could integrate into their practice and integrate into their interaction with clients in these times, and specifically in these times of transition?
Well, yeah, you could take what we were just talking about, Lyle, and you could create what we call a structured conversation. We do believe in conversation. We think it's a co-creative experience, and the listening is part of it and all. But we do it with a structure that is can be customized. So it has to be universal and repeatable if it's a tool that we have. So when you think about this why that you and I were just talking about, and you think about you ask them why, Courtney Pullen taught us this a long time ago. Courtney Pullen and Dr. Moira Summers are our beacons of wisdom and light on these things. And Courtney taught us PMO. It stands for purpose, method, outcome. So purpose is why. method is how, outcome is a result. Typically, we are trained, and I'm a CFP for well over 20 years in practice. I sold my practice 16 years ago, but I remember my training was on method and outcome. And somebody wanted sustainable cash flow. So that's an outcome. And there was a method I could get to that. But to me, that was the package. But why? Why is it important? What difference would it make if you had a sustainable income plan? Because usually there's some trade-offs to do that. Maybe it's a trade-off in spending or trade-off in times of retiring or taking risk. There's it doesn't just happen. So understanding what really is that driver turns out to be the first step. So Courtney has trained us to start with P, purpose, before we go to method. And the outcome is just a natural result. Most advisors love method because that's our seat of authority. So you want to not get there. You want to try not to get there before you've really had a why conversation. So like I just said, you know, torturing someone with five levels of why is probably not your best bet. So we ask kind of different questions. One question I would ask is, so what difference would it make if we get this project right, or we get this portfolio right, or we get this plan that you want right? What difference do you want to feel? How would your life be better if we got this? That's a whole different thing than saying why. You're helping people get a little bit deeper. Another question that we would ask in the purpose side of it is, what difference would it make to other people? Who will be served? Who could be harmed if you get it right or if you get it wrong? Also asking that, what matters now? What's at stake for you? And most people haven't heard these questions.
Yeah, exactly, because you're right. Most advisors and most clients tend to sort of focus in on the method, and here's what we're going to do to accomplish this without stepping back and thinking about why they're trying to accomplish it in the first place. What are the real deep reasons for doing that?
Yeah, and, you know, most of the time, most firms would try to get here through some kind of a psychoanalytical program. And there are some great ones out there. Some of my best friends created them and worked with those, and I think the world of them. But that does not serve this purpose. To be telling someone using AI who they are and what they're probably thinking and what might be best is, to me, it's information, but it's not knowledge. It's not a connection. Part of this is just human to human. You can use those. And it could be good information, but it informs the whole human experience. It is not the human experience, and that's what people want right now. Thank goodness.
More so than ever now. I mean, if anything, one of the bright sides of what we're going through with the pandemic is the openness of people to be able to think more broadly like that and to focus more on what really does matter and the real whys underneath things. And I've had conversations with a number of clients and colleagues who've had those same kind of thought processes and same kind of, you know, thinking in how they're looking at their lives now and going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to continue. I would say that there's an evolution happening when we're rethinking. And the lockdown was a great pause for everybody. In fact, they use that term now, the great pause. And we do experience things differently. We see things we couldn't see. We feel things we didn't have time to feel. I was going to be at 18 different conferences, and I've gotten to stay home. And it's great. I love it. And my garden is really good.
They change the way you work in the future, for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm certainly not alone in that. So recognizing that there is this human experience, connecting on that level, using that as your primary connection and engagement, and having that part of it inform the technical side is, I think, where we are moving. If we're not careful, what will come in is AI instead of human to human. And if that happens, I think we lose some of the opportunity in front of us.
Oh yeah, this is the most human of any experiences we can have in this area, you know, in terms of needing to develop those skills to be able to connect one-on-one with our clients as well. This has been really helpful, Susan. Are there other things you wanted to add before we try to wrap up today?
Well, I think if we can lean in and accept the uncertainty, embrace it, the good news is there's always a gift within great disruption. In history with pandemics, in lives of your clients, it'll all get mushed together now. It can look exhausting and chaotic and confusing, whatever. But there's a wonderful new thing that's trying to emerge. I don't know what it is, but we will all be part of it.
Yeah, it's great to be on the front line here and being able to think that way and anticipate what that might be and be prepared when it does come to us. Susan, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time out. And on behalf of the PFP section, this has been Lyle Benson and Susan Bradley. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website to find Susan's materials that she talked about a little bit here, as well as other materials that you can use in your practice. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources, and thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.